Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, January 10th, 2021. We're going to begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Golden Opportunity. Despite delays, officials still hopeful to get project off the felt with new big-name brand on board. This is by Ben Zichterman, Danville. When Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a gambling expansion law in June 2019 that allowed for six new casino licenses in Illinois, Danville officials were ecstatic. More than 18 months later, and after submitting an updated bid in November, they're still hopeful. Now we're simply waiting on the state, Mayor Ricky Williams said. No one has been approved yet, and COVID set everything back. Illinois Gaming Board Administrator Marcus Fruchter said in October that the coronavirus pandemic had delayed many of the steps that are part of the application process. COVID-19 made certain routine IGB activities, such as applicant and key person interviews, site visits, fingerprint analysis, and obtaining official tax documents and other records from state, local, and federal agencies, difficult and at times impossible, he said. The gaming board is supposed to approve licenses within a year or provide a written explanation for why it hasn't. The IGB does not comment on pending investigations of new casino applicants, spokesman Gene O'Shea said. Additionally, the board does not speculate on timelines associated with any licensing decision. Danville's application was submitted November 23rd. After city officials approved a new bid in August. The first bid from Haven Gaming, LLC, was withdrawn after the gaming board deemed it incomplete. The new bid came from a reconfigured entity called Danville Development, LLC, which is planning a casino at the site of a former warehouse at 204 East Gate Drive, about a mile northwest of the original site. The project will be led by North Rochester, New York-based Wilmerite Construction, which has three phases planned for the casino, the later ones possibly being in a larger complex on Jones Road, closer to Interstate 74. Since the city approved the bid, Wilmerite has secured Golden Nugget branding for the casino, along with online sports wagering and Landry's Steakhouse. We're excited for the opportunity to build this casino, said James Wilmot, Vice President of Gaming Development for Wilmerite. We're hopeful that come spring, we'll have some more feedback and possibly a license in place so we can get up and running. Once the license is approved, Wilmot said construction should begin within 2 months and be completed within 9 months of breaking ground. He also said he's not too worried about COVID-19 affecting the casino industry. We haven't seen a lot of foreclosures. Everybody's surviving, Wilmot said. But it's certainly added a new list of challenges and made the industry look at what it's doing and how. Wilmerite added 10,000 square feet to its original plan to better handle new restrictions, like the ones imposed during the pandemic. And Wilmot said, the Danville Casino will have the benefit of learning from what has worked well at others. We've been able to sample industry leaders before us, he said, and we're certainly hoping the vaccine will be rolled out and readily taken by the public. He also said a casino in Terre Haute, Indiana, which received its license in May, will provide some competition. It's something we've taken into account since the beginning, Wilmot said. It will ding our numbers, but those are numbers we've shown to the city, and we're looking forward to competing for that customer. At a city council meeting in August, Wilmerite said it expected the casino to bring in about $66 million annually, with about $6.2 million of that going to the city. Designs include 500 slot machines, 10 tables, the steakhouse restaurant, and a food court, and more than 700 parking spaces. Williams said having the Golden Nugget branding will help draw its loyalty club members to the Danville location for different rewards. And being a new location, we just have some different things to offer that some of the other places don't, Williams said. I think it's going to be good to have that national partnership and recognition. Alderman Mike Puer said having the Golden Nugget branding is very good news. And Steve Foster, who recently retired from the Danville City Council, said he remains optimistic that the city will one day have a casino, something local officials have put decades into lobbying the state for. Ultimately, we're going to get a casino sometime, somewhere, he said. If it receives a license, Danville Development LLC will pay $1 million to Riverfront Development Project, $1 million to the local Boys and Girls Club, and $1 million in municipal improvements. Boys and Girls Club of Danville Executive Director Rob Gifford said he's eager to hear what the state decides. If you hear something, let me know, he said. Continuing on this front page, I have an article titled, She's Leaving a Strong Foundation. This is from the Community Foundation of East Central Illinois. CEO retiring after nearly two decades. It's by Tom Kasich. Champaign. Joan Dixon was imprinted as a wee child with the notion of fetching pennies, nickels, and dimes and doing for others. My mother in particular was very involved in volunteering and that sort of thing, recalled Dixon. And as a good little Catholic girl, we always had propagation of the faith stamps that Catholic kids sold to raise money for missionary work. We were always selling things to our parents and grandparents. So even though her first career path was theater and her second was marketing and public relations, Dixon had no trouble stepping up to become head of the Community Foundation of East Central Illinois in 2002. After nearly 20 successful years as its president and CEO, she will retire June 30th to be succeeded by Angie Hatfield, the organization's vice president of development. I had a good long run at the foundation, and I think we've been able to do a lot of good work to benefit our area, she said. And I'm very confident that my successor is going to be bringing new blood and some innovation to what we do, said Dixon, who has lived in Champaign nearly all of her life. Dixon's run includes overseeing growth in assets from $3.4 million when she began to nearly $30 million today. It was $20 million just 4 years ago. An increase in grants, gifts, and scholarships awarded from about $25,000 a year to more than $1 million annually now. A phenomenal jump in the nonprofit organization's help from about 10 to nearly 150 a year, and a geographical expansion as well. What had been just the Champaign County Foundation now covers 9 counties. Joan has provided leadership, guidance, and support to a variety of community groups, said Trina Wright Dixon, who chairs the foundation board. Her contributions to our community foundation, our nonprofit sector, and our region have been invaluable. Joan's philanthropic legacy is unparalleled in Central Illinois. Marker noted what she has inherited from Dixon. In our line of work, we talk a lot about leaving a legacy for future generations. As our CEO, Joan's certainly done that for our organization, she said. Over the years, she's laid the groundwork for us to succeed, working with our staff and trustees to put policies and procedures in place to make this planned transition easy for all of us. That's a hallmark of a great leader, said Marker, who recently earned a master's degree in nonprofit administration. She's left some pretty big penny loafers for me to try to fill. I'm humbled and grateful and ready to work with our team to build on her achievements as we continue expanding our impact in East Central Illinois. Joan has a knack for conveying her point, really getting it across, and doing it with such a wonderful sense of humor, said Champaign philanthropist Phyllis Robeson. Dixon never intended to run an organization that manages and administers millions of dollars in endowed funds from large and small donors. A Champaign native who split her education evenly among Holy Cross and St. Matthew schools and Centennial High School, she left town to attend Rosary College in suburban Chicago, intending to become a stage manager or to teach theater history. Then one suburban theater burned down and another one closed. I took that as a sign, she said. That caused me to get my master's degree at the University of Illinois. Because if you can't get a job with a bachelor's in theater, you might as well try it with a master's. The theater bug cruelly dispatched. She went to work at the American Oil Chemists Society in Champaign for a while, and then became senior director of allied services at Christie Clinic. There, she oversaw a large budget and lots of people, and was asked by Christie to serve on the Community Foundation Board. After about 3 years, opportunity knocked. Other board members noticed that she had the interest and the acumen to run the foundation and didn't interview anyone else. It helped, Dixon said, that in 1992, she obtained another degree, an MBA, from the U of I. With a small staff but a dedicated board, the foundation has seen great growth. Don't forget the stock market in 2000 and 2002 wasn't good. And in 2008, it wasn't good, she recalled. I remember at some of the early board meetings, I just told them that I wasn't going to report on the financial performance any longer because it was just too darned depressing. But things have improved greatly, she said. This is a great community. It's a very generous community. This past year has been so remarkable, Dixon said. We've had people give us money for COVID-related issues as well as regular needs. During the pandemic, donors have used the Community Foundation to direct funds to food banks, soup kitchens, for rental and housing assistance, and for school supplies and other school-related items. Working with the United Way and other groups, they were able to make $1.2 million in virus-related donations. It doesn't get any better than giving away other people's money, she joked. Seriously, though, we just happen to have a more intimate knowledge of how money can best be deployed. The nonprofit sector has just been phenomenal through all of this. Dixon pledges to work full-time through June 30th and is hopeful that the foundation can host its annual Hearts of Gold Gala in person in late May. In retirement, she plans to help with the foundation's Center for Nonprofit Excellence, do some reading, and tackle a few delayed projects. I'm completely running out of excuses to not clean out the garage, so I'll probably do that, she said. I hope to maybe have a hobby now that I won't be working full-time. Dixon noted that she and her good friend Sam Banks, executive director of the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club, will retire on the same day in June. I told him, maybe we'll be able to meet in the park for a soda pop or something, she said. And continuing on the front page from Champaign-Urbana Schools, article titled Second Semester Challenge, Bring Students Back by Anthony Zilas, Champaign. For a few weeks last fall, Champaign Superintendent Susan Zola finally had a chance to walk into schools and hear the sound of students talking and teachers instructing while physically in front of students, not looking at them through a computer screen. The teachers were so excited to be back. The students were so excited to be back, Zola said. I just think people very much appreciated what schools offer as what we've always done. When you've lost that opportunity to actually come to the school and meet with your teacher, I think it just really brought home the importance of educators in our community. With coronavirus transmission rates in the county rising, the district returned to remote learning after just 3 weeks. But starting January 20th, it's ready to try in-person learning again, with around half of students set to return. Urbana will do the same on January 19th. The districts have made do with remote learning, with Urbana never returning to in-person instruction during the first semester. Attendance was fairly similar to a normal year for both districts. Champaign's 91% attendance rate is just below its 93% rate from last year. And Urbana High School maintained a 92% attendance rate, according to the districts. But physically returning to a school building is far different. While learning remotely, students can log off with one click of the mouse, and they may or may not be counted in attendance. In person, that's far different. In Urbana's case, those attendance numbers also account for students who can't log on during their class's scheduled time, but finish work later. We have to look at family situations, Norton said. For instance, if the child is in daycare and isn't able to get on at that synchronous time, we work with families and balance the asynchronous work with that can constitute attendance for a school day. When they return, both districts will have some sort of virus testing. In Champaign, on-site PCR tests are available for symptomatic students. Urbana was able to participate in a pilot of Abbott Labs' Binax Now COVID-19 Ag Card tests, which return results in 15 minutes and can be used as screener tests and for symptomatic students. Champaign passed on the chance to pilot the Abbott test to allow nearby districts without access to Carl's PCR testing to have some sort of testing, Zola said, adding that the district is still in talks with the University of Illinois about its rapid saliva test. Zola said that school nurses and staff, like psychologists and therapists, have received their first round of vaccinations. Both districts will open up their elementary school buildings to all students who want to come to school, with the caveat that Urbana will cap its class sizes if too many students request to return in person. Thus far, that isn't an issue. Urbana will run its elementary school classes synchronously online and in person. After discussing several options, Champaign schools will have in-person and remote students taught separately. Half of the five-hour day will be synchronous learning and half will be remote, asynchronous learning for both districts. At the middle and high school level, Urbana will open up the school for students who are most in need and selected by teachers and administrators. Students will meet with their teachers for extra support. In Champaign, certain classes and study groups will meet in person on certain days. We have some students who are doing very well with remote, Norton said. Maybe they're even doing better now with this format. When they have a smaller time of instruction and during the asynchronous kind of work around their own time. So some students are doing very well with that. But we do have a population of students that are doing very well with that. But we see that we do have a population of our students that are still struggling. And we also know that our youngest students, being behind a computer for a long period of time is not ideal. And so we just want to provide more interaction. For Zola, conversations with Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride and observations of schools across the area make her comfortable that, with strong mitigations, a return to school will be safe. I think Pride has acknowledged that protocols are very strong in school settings, she said. We've seen that with schools across Champaign County, where schools have been open. I think we're all hopeful in the next several weeks, with vaccinations on the horizon, and for our educators, that'll be just another step to returning to school. Continuing on the next page with Top of the Morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossaw. Last week's ice storm had Champagne's Joyce Nagel Einstein flipping through his scrapbook. In 1967, her son made the front page of the Champaign-Urbana Courier. Robert Nagel, then 4, was photographed outside the Illini Union as part of the newspaper's coverage of a storm that rocked CU. The Nagels went to the Union that night because power was out at their home on Park Haven Drive, and we didn't have heat, Joyce said. People didn't have power for days. At newsgazette.com, you'll find photo galleries from area ice storms in 1990, 78, and 67. Nagel Einstein, 83, experienced all three and said 67 was the most memorable. It was pretty, but it was pretty devastating, too. And on this day in history, area history in 1921, Mrs. Newton M. Harris died at Burnham Hospital. She had given hundreds of thousands of dollars to local benevolent and charitable enterprises, most recently $100,000, $1.4 million in today's dollars, to Burnham Hospital, which was founded by her mother, Julia F. Burnham. And in 1971, Paul Powell's private secretary refused to answer questions about the late Secretary of State's hidden fortune, according to the chief investigator for the Illinois Attorney General, Mrs. Margaret Hensey. Powell's personal secretary and close companion refused to answer questions on the advice of her attorneys, said J. Waldo Ackerman, Deputy Attorney General. In 2006, in response to that year's drought and the ever-increasing residential and commercial demand for fresh water, Governor Rod Blagojevich ordered a statewide water supply side study that was likely to focus first on East Central Illinois. International history, today's highlight. On January 10, 1776, Thomas Paine anonymously published his influential pamphlet, Common Sense, which argued for American independence from British rule. We'll continue with Jay Simpson, Jay's take, titled Cherish Your Family. The holidays were great, but now it's back to the grind. I enjoyed all the time I got to spend with family and friends over the break, because if this year hasn't done anything else, it's made me cherish the ones closest to me. In 2020, life hit us all from different angles and put us to the test. In some cases, you had no choice but to lean on family and loved ones, no matter how independent you thought you were. Family knows you best, and family is something I've always cherished. I grew up in a really big family, and we were always family first, no matter what. Over the years, people started to do their own thing, and we lost that vibe. But dealing with 2020 and all of its random tragedies brought us back together, and now we can rekindle relationships that were once most valuable to all of us. We all motivate each other to strive for greatness. Some of us are doing better than others, but we are all each other's motivation. There will be tough days, but you must see the bigger picture, and that's what family is supposed to remind you. When I speak on family, I'm not always speaking on my actual blood relatives. I'm speaking on the people who show the most loyalty to me. I was raised that blood makes you related, but loyalty makes you family. Have a wonderful and blessed year, everyone. Jay Simpson writes for the News Gazette, and his column appears Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays, and he can be reached at jsimpson@newsgazette.com. Continuing with local news, Rantoul Home Search, article titled Man Facing Drug Weapons Charges by Mary Shank, Rantoul. A Rantoul man was being held Saturday in lieu of $50,000 bond after his arrest Friday at his home on drug and weapons charges. Assistant State's Attorney Lauren McQueen said Adrian Gonzalez, 19, of the 400 block of Letchworth Avenue, was arrested at his home following a court-authorized search during which Rantoul police found about 4 ounces of cannabis, 2 pistols, ammunition, Xanax, and a small amount of cocaine in his bedroom. The serial number had been scratched off one of the guns, and Gonzalez told police he does not have a firearm owner's identification card. McQueen said Gonzalez, who had about $1,120 in the home, admitted to selling cocaine and cannabis regularly. Gonzalez appeared in bond court Saturday before Judge Randy Rosenbaum. McQueen said he will be formally charged on Monday. And from the crime report by the News Gazette, area police report the following activity. In Champaign, in the 100 block of East John Street, window damaged, credit card stolen in vehicle break-in, 1:30 p.m. January 2nd. The 200 block of East Clark Street, several items of clothing, jewelry, and purse stolen on January 2nd. At Columbia Avenue and Neal Street, 16-year-old arrested on charges of possession of stolen vehicle after being found with keys for Dodge Avenger belonging to a St. Joseph man that fled from a traffic stop about 12:30 a.m. Friday. At Four Big Tires, 1306 North Prospect Avenue, glass broken on the side entrance to gain entry between 11 p.m. Monday and 9 a.m. Tuesday. Register open, but nothing apparently taken. At Jiffy Lube, 1201 North Prospect Avenue, front door was broken, money taken early Tuesday. At Car X, 906 West Bradley Avenue, business forcibly entered, cash register damaged about 2:30 a.m. Tuesday. At Western Bowl, 917 Francis Drive, door damaged during forced entry, about 4:15 a.m. Tuesday. Nothing apparently taken. Piccadilly Beverage Shop at 1215 North Prospect Avenue. Man attempted to break in about 3:15 a.m. Tuesday by hitting glass door with hammer. No entry made. At Speed Lube, 307 East University Avenue, front door shattered Monday night or early Tuesday. At Jiffy Lube, 1901 South Neal Street, burglary discovered Tuesday morning, cash and keys missing. At 600 block of East Green Street, apartment burgled between December 22nd and Wednesday. Items taken include several pieces of jewelry, artwork, credit cards, cash, backpack, and a purse. In the 0 to 100 block of East Haley Street, apartment entered Tuesday evening, handgun stolen. In the 300 block of Kenwood Road, apartment forcibly entered Tuesday morning, Xbox and 2 games stolen. In the 1400 block of Bluegrass Lane, women's front window broken by relative Tuesday morning. That's it for the local news for now. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour for the News Gazette for Sunday, January 10th, 2021. Please stay tuned.